program may not represent the views of Bonneville International Corporation or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. Off the Shelf gives a voice to commercial service and product companies selling in the federal market. Roger speaks to members and government officials about procurement policy trends, innovations, and debates. Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Now, your host, Roger Waldron.
Today, my guest is David Dowd. David is a partner at Mayer Brown LLP here in Washington, D.C., and he specializes in government contracts. And David, today we're going to talk about the latest rules with regard to issuing orders under the multiple award schedule program. I think it's a big deal when you talk about a program that actually between the GSA schedules and the VA schedules, it accounts for just about $50 billion in annual purchases by the federal government. So it's a big chunk of the procurement pie that goes out there. And and last week on March 16th, the executive branch finally issued its rules updating the ordering procedures. And what was the origin of this? Can you give us some background?
Sure, I could give you a bit of background. Thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure to be here with you.
It's always a pleasure to have you on, David.
Thanks a lot. Well, this was a long-awaited rule. It was issued as an interim rule last Wednesday, the 16th of March. Has an effective date of May 16th. Applies to orders, solicitations, and contracts all awarded after that date. It applies to orders issued under contracts that predate that date as well. The origin of this was the really traces back a number of years to recommendations by the Acquisition Advisory Panel flowing out of...
I think I'm familiar with that.
Yeah, you might be. flowing out of a lot of work that the panel did and looking at orders being placed under the Multiple Award Schedule Program as well as IDIQ, Task and Delivery Order contracts. And I think it's fair to say the panel had a concern about the level of competition being placed for those orders. And really coincident with that, there had been a provision, Section 803, in the Defense Authorization Act for fiscal year 2002, as I recall, that called for, at least for DOD agencies, increased competition for orders being placed under the Multiple Award Schedule Program as well as IDIQ contracts. So really what we see with this interim rule is the implementation of Section 863 of the Defense Authorization Act for 2009, fiscal year 2009, and what it basically does is implement enhanced competition procedures for agencies, both on the DOD side and civilian side, for orders being placed under the multiple award schedule and for task and delivery order contracts.
So basically, I know you're being a lawyer. Let's put it in layman's terms, all right? That's like extending the competition requirements that DOD currently has operated under, where you got to provide notice to all the scheduled contractors or as many as practicable to reasonably receive at least three offers. They applied those now to civilian agencies in the FAR, right? So there's one set of rules, right?
That's fair. One set of rules. A couple of slight differences. The Section 803 rules applied at the threshold of $100,000. And now these rules apply, the new rules apply to the simplified acquisition threshold. We can talk about that details a bit. But they're basically triggered by the
simplified. Which is $150,000.
Which is $150,000. Right? Yeah. So it's actually a slight change for DOD agencies. It's obviously a new requirement for civilian agencies.
Well, so tell me, from your perspective, what are some of the key aspects of the rule?
Yeah, the bigger aspects of the rule, I think, are maybe twofold. First, on the multiple award schedule side, one of the big differences is to focus on the simplified acquisition threshold. You know, previously, you know, as you're well aware, with the multiple award schedule program, you had sort of a three-tiered approach, if you will. You had micro-purchase orders, purchases below the micro-purchase threshold. You then had orders placed between the micro-purchase threshold and the maximum order threshold in the contract, and you then had a process for orders being placed above the maximum order threshold. Essentially, what the rule now does on the multiple award schedule side is to get rid of the maximum order threshold in terms of competitive procedures and replace it with a simplified acquisition threshold. So okay. We really have a set of rules that applies to purchases above the simplified acquisition threshold. On the IDIQ side, I think the major change in the rule is to, and maybe yet another effort to, enhance what was mandated by Congress a decade and a half ago, and that is to provide for a fair opportunity to compete for orders to the schedule holders.
Okay. I see. So, I mean, what it sounds to me like, and I guess you could, why don't you walk through a little bit, like, for if I'm an agency and I have an order over $150,000, what's going to happen now from the contractor's perspective and the agency's perspective?
Okay. Well, first, it depends on what kind of order it is. Let's do both, I guess. On the schedule side, if you've got an order that exceeds the simplified acquisition threshold, you've got really two main options. You have to provide notice, you know, it's going to be fair notice, of that intended order to schedule holders. You could either do it through posting on eBuy.
Right, yep.
Or if you don't post on eBuy, you have to give notice of that intended order to as many contractors that, based on your market research, as applicable, could perform the work, could fulfill the requirement. If you do not use eBuy and you get less than three orders, less than three quotes, you then have to document why it is that additional contractors couldn't perform the work.
Okay.
On the IDIQ side, the new rules call for fair notice to be given to all contract holders of that intended order. If
this is over $150,000.
Again, over $150,000.
Okay.
Over the simplified acquisition threshold. Fair notice to all of the contract holders, and then an opportunity to compete, telling them in that notice what the basic criteria will be, what the work is and what the criteria will be. You know, another change, there used to be in the MAS ordering procedures, there was a split for, and there still is to some extent, but there is a split between when a statement of work was required and when a statement of work was not required. One of the big changes I see in the interim rule is, even in those instances when a statement of work is not required, so you're not talking about something that's priced based on hourly rates.
Okay.
You still have to give now to the schedule contract holders a description of the work to be performed, the services to be performed, or the supplies that the agency is interested in, and then give those contractors a chance to compete.
So, and I guess I guess as I understand it, the regulation specifically identifies eBuy as one method to provide notice to all the contractors.
Right, yeah. eBuy is one method, not the only method that could be used. There is a difference, though. If eBuy is used by the agency, that's good enough.
Yeah.
If the agency does not use eBuy and ends up with less than three quotes being received,
then they got to document
their
file.
That is
consistent with the way DOD implemented Section 803 back all those many years ago. And I think one of the key aspects of it from my perspective is the fact that when DOD implemented this requirement for their use back 2003 or 2004, that GSA had just created eBuy, and it's the electronic quote system where agencies can post their requirements to all the contractors can see them. That provides the notice to all, and then you can submit an offer. I think one of the key things, and you tell me if I'm wrong here, is that, you know, if you see the quote, you can submit an offer, and the agency's got to consider it. That's part of that competitive process. Is that right?
That's right.
Okay. Well, with that, we've come to our first break. We have to break right now, and we'll be talking more with David Dowd from Mayor Brown, and we're talking about the latest ordering procedures for the $50 billion GSA Schedules program. You're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Almost 70 years ago, a well-known Connecticut native named Homer Cummings had a dream to start a Washington law firm devoted to working at the intersection of America's business and government. As Attorney General for Franklin Delano Roosevelt, he was an integral part of the New Deal. In 1956, Gilbert A. Cuneo joined Cummings' firm to begin what was quickly to become the largest and most successful government contract practice in the country, earning him the title the Godfather of Government Contracts. That same firm, McKenna, Long & Aldridge, today is recognized by Chambers USA as a Tier 1 government contract law firm, continuing its preeminence in the field through its offices in Washington, D.C., Los Angeles, Denver, and San Diego. With the oldest and largest government contracts practice in the United States, McKenna, Long & Aldridge still operates at the intersection of business and government. They produce solutions by working with their clients on creative and flexible strategies that ensure success. Their attorneys and professionals include former members of government, Congress, and its committees, so they know how Congress thinks and they understand how Washington works. There is no aspect of government contracts with which they are not familiar. In this uncertain economic climate, clients trust them to deliver solutions at costs that represent real value. From one new deal to another, they have remained at the forefront of government contracting. McKenna, Long & Aldrich, a name you can trust.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we're talking to David Dowd, a partner at Mayer Brown LLP, and we're talking about the new GSA schedule ordering procedures that were just issued last week, updating FAR 8.4. And when we left, we were talking a little bit about the standard competition requirements. This segment, and I know this is a little bit technical, but this is how the government competes and obligates money. And as I mentioned, it's a $50 billion program, so it's real money, and it's real competition and real set of procedures. Now, BPAs, blanket purchase agreements, those are a tool that are used on the schedule to sort of acquire or create an agreement for recurring requirements, and they typically, I think, can be for products or services or whatever. You know, there's a lot of interesting stuff done in here with regard to BPAs. Can you tell us about it, David?
Sure. Prior to the interim rule and the current FAR, there's some guidance on the use of BPAs in the multiple award schedule program, talking about when you might have what we think of as a single award BPA, meaning a BPA awarded to a single contractor, or multiple award BPAs, in which case the agency would award BPAs to several contractors. The interim rule that we're talking about here that was issued last week really adds a lot more guidance, I think, in terms of BPAs and the issuance of BPAs. And I thought I'd touch on a couple of the differences. In the old, and I'll call it the old rule, it's still the rule that applies up through, through May 15 until May 16. But the old rule talked about when you might have a single award BPA and when you might have multiple award BPAs, gave a bit of guidance in that sense. Now, under the interim rule, there's an express preference for multiple award BPAs. It's a real effort to discourage the use of single award BPAs.
And that is sort of consistent with the way IDIQ is in Part 16 of the FAR.
Also wants there to be multiple award contracts for several offer contractors that would then compete for orders. So very similar approach between what you see now in 8.4.
Well, I have a question about that, and it sort of goes from the program perspective. And I understand the idea of increasing competition and having multiple BPAs to do that, but you know, there are also, it seems to me, there needs to be or there should be a place or some flexibility, and they've tried to limit the flexibility to do a single award BPA, because often there, it's a question of whether you're going to, have a competition amongst a bunch of scheduled contractors to establish multiple BPAs in order to have another competition after that amongst those BPA holders, when sometimes it seems to me it's going to make sense to just take the scheduled contracts, compete for a single BPA because you've got a set of requirements, and it could be a very unique set of requirements, customer-centric sort of thing, and it's going to be more efficient for the government and for industry. It's going to cost industry less, ultimately it costs the government less, frankly, to put it in place, to just go and do that single BPA. You have any thoughts on that?
I think that's a fair criticism. One of the challenges I see generally with multiple award scenarios is you've got that second order competition, right? You've got the competition in the first instance. And this is true for BPA, certainly, now looking forward, and it is for IDIQ contracts, generally speaking. You've got a competition in the first instance to establish who the contractors are, and then you're going to have a further competition to decide which contractor or contractors are going to perform particular orders. I think on the BPA and the schedule side, you almost have the risk of three levels of competition. I mean, you have the establishment of the schedule contract in the first place, and that's deemed to be a competitive procedure. You then say, okay, under this interim rule, we're now going to have a competition for a BPA, for BPAs or multiple BPAs, and that's the preference for multiple. And then we're going to compete orders under that BPA. Now the third level of competition, which seems certainly a robust approach to competing the orders.
Yeah, it's creating additional layers where it seems to me, one of the beauties of the schedules program is you've got those contracts established, you've got fair and reasonable pricing that's been negotiated there, and boom, you've got a set of requirements. you do your competition, you put something in place. I mean, I agree with the idea of limiting it for 5 years and no more. I mean, the way the regulation does and trying to, you know, make sure people are constantly looking to make sure they've got a good deal. Absolutely. That's appropriate. But I I'm not saying it's totally wrong to focus on having multiple BPAs, but I think there should be a little bit more balance in providing, you know, especially even in the context of strategic sourcing. There's some things that strategic sourcing, an agency ought to be able to go strategically source directly to a schedule, competed amongst a group of scheduled contractors and set up their sort of enterprise-wide BPA or order, for lack of a better term, and strategically source that way instead of saying, okay, after these BPAs are set up, then I'm going to do that.
So I agree. It's going to be more difficult, much more difficult to do that now. Some of the other, just to finish up quickly on that, on the BPA, some of the other differences that we see, in addition to the preference for multiple awards, the five-year limit, which was there in the past, is repeated now. For the single award, it's limited to 1 year, though an agency can have 4 one-year options to go with that. There's then a review to be undertaken each year to see whether the BPA should be continued or not. So there really is a strong emphasis on competition. One might say even more so in the BPA context than in the other context, because you've got the several orders of competition. And I agree with you. If the competition for the BPA in the first instance is robust, you start to wonder, shouldn't that be good enough?
Right. Let me use a real life example just for a second. Is that and it's a different contract type, but if you're doing the DHS IT, infrastructure, and you did it on schedules, I mean, unless the agency had signed a determination, you'd have to do multiple BPAs. Does that sort of in the IDIQ multiple award alliant type environment, that order is that order, and the way it's set up, whoever wins it, right? Is that, right.
That's correct. I mean, that is the difference between the two programs, where the BPA on the schedule is going to be subject to further competition in many respects than the orders would be.
Well, you know, there's another area, and I just wondered what your thoughts on it are, and that is, with these new competition requirements and the negotiation up front of fair and reasonable pricing, what role do you see the price reduction clause playing in all this?
That's a very interesting question. I guess I'd take it this way. When you look at the price reduction clause, it refers to the fact that the clause does not apply in the event of orders placed over the maximum order threshold. What would the rationale for that be? Well, the rationale for
David, just a moment for a second. So we've reached our threshold. We have to take a break. But when we return, we'll be talking more with David Dowd from Mayer Brown, LLP. And we've been talking about the new schedule ordering procedures that were issued last week and affect all GSAs and VA's $50 billion schedule program. You're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
What do successful small, medium, and large federal contractors, including two-thirds of the top 100, have in common? Membership in the Coalition for Government Procurement. Successful federal contractors know they get the information edge they need on developing acquisition trends and an effective voice to protect their interests from coalition membership. For nearly 30 years, the Coalition's been the trusted voice of industry, working with federal officials to promote common sense procurement. Know what the best know. Join the Coalition today to protect and grow your company's business. Contact the Coalition at 202-331-0975 or visit their website at thecgp.org. That's 202-331-0975 or thecgp.org. Don't be left wondering what will happen to your federal business. Contact the Coalition today.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today we are talking to David Dowd, a partner at Mayer Brown, LLP. And we've been talking about the new schedule ordering procedures in FAR 8.4. That's Federal Acquisition Regulation for you folks out there. FAR 8.4 just became effective last week. And when we left, we were just about to talk about one of my favorite subjects, the Price Reduction Clause. David?
Yes. The question was really, what does all this mean for the Price Reduction Clause? And The price reduction clause, which is included in all multiple award scheduled contracts, provides for price reduction in the event of certain events. I guess keep it simple. It does not apply to orders that are placed above the maximum order threshold. And I believe when we spoke earlier, we talked about how that concept, the maximum order threshold.
Well, it doesn't apply. What actually the way we're right? It's that for the way the price reduction clause works is that if there are certain, you have a tracking customer, and if you give a lower price to that commercial tracking customer, you have to give the government same price.
Correct.
And what it doesn't apply to is if you have a definite quantity contract or order that exceeds the government's maximum order threshold that's in the contract, you give that to your commercial customer, then that doesn't trigger a price reduction.
Correct.
Is that right?
That's correct.
Is that clear?
That's clear.
Okay, good.
And under the FAR, prior to the effective date of the interim rule in FAR 8.4, the procedure was that for orders that exceed the maximum order threshold, the FAR called for competition amongst schedule holders, schedule contract holders. And now with the interim rule, what we've got essentially is a mandate, I think the simplest way to put it, is a mandate for competition for all orders down to the simplified acquisition threshold, which will typically be, in fact, maybe in almost all cases will be, below the maximum order threshold that's in the schedule contracts. So what we now have is we've got in schedule contracts a maximum order threshold. Let's say it's $500,000.
Yeah.
And there was in the FAR, and there is effective through May 15, a procedure under which if an agency is going to place an order that is above that amount, above that maximum order threshold, the agency has to compete that order. And if it turns out, as you mentioned, if it turns out there's a sale to a tracking customer that's above the maximum order threshold, it is not taken into account for price reduction purposes. So there's sort of a symmetry between the price reduction clause and the requirement for competition.
Right, the regulation matched up with the clauses in the contract.
Right. But we now have, with the interim rule, we now have a mandate for competition at a much lower level than, it may be a very much lower level than.
Well, I would say a mandate for even more enhanced competition.
Right. There always had been in schedule contracts requirement to consider, you know, to survey the list of contractors available on GSA Advantage and solicit quotes perhaps. But now there's an enhanced requirement of competition all the way down to the simplified acquisition threshold, and it makes one start to wonder if there's going to be competition for those orders at $151,000 and such. Why does the government need the price reduction clause? Because wasn't there, at least in the older version of the FAR, the one that's still in effect through May 15, wasn't there a symmetry between the requirement for that enhanced level of competition, which was the orders above the maximum order threshold, and the applicability of the price reduction clause?
I understand that, David. That was good. I appreciate that. You know, another issue I think that sort of that you want to touch on a little bit is this issue of symmetry or convergence.
Yes, I think, we've got.
Explain that to
sure.
me. That's one I'm sort of struggling with. Okay.
I think we mentioned that the easiest way to think of this interim rule is that it looks to harmonize the requirements for competitions for orders. And you can have orders under multiple award schedule contracts. You can have orders under indefinite delivery, indefinite quantity, task or delivery order contracts, multiple award contracts of that sort. And really what this rule does is seek to require, for both of those, fair notice of an intent to make a purchase and a fair opportunity to be considered for that purchase on the part of industry. So really what we're treating is orders similarly. And so that you have a convergence, if you will, of the way orders are being treated in the sense of requiring competition for both of them above the simplified acquisition threshold, which is a good thing. I think we still see through the FAR, though, a number of areas where orders are treated differently depending on where they are. The price reductions clause is obviously one difference. It would apply to the multiple award schedule program, but does not apply to IDIQ contracts generally. You've got a different debriefing requirement. It'll apply to certain sized orders, you know, over $5 million under task and delivery order contracts, but there is no debriefing requirement.
This new rule doesn't mention debriefing.
It's not mentioned that. Yeah. For part 8.4, there is no debriefing requirement. And then there are some differences in protest jurisdiction between the two. Again, you know, you can protest certain task and delivery order awards over $10 million. You can protest basically any schedule order.
Yeah. So, but another aspect of this rule, and that is it's an interim rule. And I think it's fair to say there have been a lot of interim use of the interim rule for, frankly, implementing new rules. So do you have any views on that?
Sure. I think it is a definite trend. We're seeing many more interim rules being issued. I mean, this rule, it was issued as an interim rule. The rationale was that it was required by the Defense Authorization Act for fiscal year 2008 or 2009, as I recall. So it should have been implemented quite some time ago. So it's late.
Uh-huh.
The rule is late. The trend toward the use of interim rules, I mean, I see it, two problems. One, the government loses the benefit of comments that could be taken into account and reflected in whatever rule becomes applicable. I mean, in this case now, the rule will become applicable before the government really has a chance to digest any comments. They'll receive comments up through May 15, but won't have a chance to really reflect those in any applicable rule until after the rule already takes effect. That's a problem. I think it's a problem for industry, because for industry to feel that the comments are being considered, I think it would be better if the comments were submitted on and received on a proposed rule before any rule takes effect.
Well, I mean, hopefully what we'll see, you know, with the idea of MythBusters and communicating with industry, that there'll be and you know, they did do the GSA, OFPP, and DOD, and NASA all did the slam on looking how to improve the regulatory process. I hope one of the things they're looking at is, in the, you know, spirit of communication with industry, is getting that proposed rule out there for people to comment on, rather than going with the interim rule. I think that, I mean, but I think those are the kind of things they are focusing on.
Yeah. It can be a challenge in terms of timing. If sometimes there will not be enough time, the rulemakers will always be under pressure.
David Dowd, he's partner at Mayer Brown LLP. I'm Roger Waldron, and this is Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
You've been listening to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition of Government Procurement. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Off the Shelf, Tuesday mornings at 10:30, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Tired of playing catch up with the news? Stay informed all the time with the Federal News Flash. The Federal News Flash is a daily email from Federal News Radio that will bring you the latest news and information about the federal government and the federal contracting world. Find out about exclusive stories and interviews only heard on Federal News Radio. Sign up for the Federal News Flash at federalnewsradio.com. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.
As gas prices rise, more focus will shift toward the administration's ambitious clean energy goals. Join FCA Bethesda and FCA Energy on May 4th at the Bethesda North Marriott for the second Energy in the Environment IT Day, featuring EPA, DOE, GSA, NRC, NOAA, and Interior, to discuss energy efficiency, agency cooperation, and IT spending priorities. Register at FCABethesda.com/EEIT Day. Special thanks to premier sponsors Lockheed Martin, Northrop Grumman, and Booz Allen Hamilton, and platinum sponsors HP and Centurion Research Solutions.
The Dorebeck Insider, hosted by award-winning journalist and free thinker Chris Dorebeck. Engage your mind every afternoon from 3 to 7 as Chris engages the best minds in federal procurement, management, IT, and human resources. The Dorebeck Insider takes on subjects critical for an efficient government. Chris's guests answer the questions you want answered. Tune in to hear how the news shapes your daily interactions in the federal space. The Dorebeck Insider, weekday afternoons from 3 to 7, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.